Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. And she uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Brian.
How are you?
Today I am also flexible.
Yes.
So we've had a little change up in our programming this afternoon, and I first want to send out some love and speedy wishes for recovery to Lois Bristow, who was supposed to be my guest this afternoon, but she was unable to make it in today. So we will reschedule, and we'll get a chance to talk to her. She's a very wise woman in her late 80s, and she's a PhD. She's an author. She has so many lives under her belt. And so we will be talking to her about the onset of aging, or maybe not the onset, but how the aging process has been for her, going from feeling ready to take on the world to realizing it's time to slow down. So I'm sad that we don't have Lois here today, because I was really excited to have her on the air with us again. She's been a guest once before, but we will get to her. I may take our recording device to her at her house and make that happen.
There we go.
It'll be practice for this summer when we're taking the show on the road.
Right. Looking forward to how that goes.
I know. I like the way you said that. Was that with a smile of hopefulness or?
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely. Optimism.
I like that. I like optimism. And so with that same optimistic spirit, we just bumped the show for next week up to this week. And it's a topic that I enjoy exploring. I talk about it every quarter in my classes. I write about it. I talk to my friends about it and my children ad nauseum. I think, you know, most of them are tired of hearing about it. But it is such a... to me, it is such a fundamental concept and fundamental reason why so many people struggle with anxiety and depression and feelings of loneliness or emptiness or ennui or boredom or frustration, that I think it needs to be talked about over and over and over again, because the story is so supported in culture, in the media, in advertising, in greeting cards, that it's very difficult to recognize the connection between today's topic and the great deal of unrest, unease, dis-ease is probably the better word, that so many people feel because of their pursuit of this. So without dancing around too much today, we're going to talk about happiness and the failed attempts at pursuing happiness as a life goal, and how it sets us up for poor mental health. And so I hope that catches you a little off guard. I hope that you feel like, wait a second, I think being happy is absolutely the most important thing in life. I tell my children that every day. And that is precisely why we're going to do the show on it. Because it's, to me, one of the most loaded, heavy things we can ever lay on a child is, I just want you to be happy. It's unobtainable for long periods of time. But then others might be saying, but wait a second, all of the current research, we have positive psychology, we have all of these, we have a documentary called Happy, we have Bhutan, which is measuring not just their gross economic indicators, but they're looking at their gross economic, or the gross indicators of happiness in the country. I mean, it must be something of value, because so many people are talking about it and so much research is being done about the issue of happiness and how important it is. And yes, granted, there's a lot of research being done. And yes, there's a lot of talk of it. But I think the type of happiness that we're talking about in different instances is not the same as the happiness that is pushed upon us in our cultural messages, in the media, in the way that we talk about happiness. The pursuit of happiness, as was written in the Declaration of Independence, is not the pursuit of happiness that we wish on people today. Mm-hmm. So that's the argument I'm going to make. And we are, of course, going to open up the phone lines, because I'm happy to play ping pong with this topic with anyone who wants to. Because I do think, even when I say it out loud, you know, don't wish happiness on people. I don't tell my children, I hope you're happy. Even inside of me, it feels bad, right? Yeah. It's like, what kind of bad person am I? What kind of dour childhood must I have had? that I have such strong feelings about happiness and how it should be used much more judiciously than it is used today. And then I go back to looking at, you know, my own research and the intentions of happiness, and then I feel better again. So I'm ready. Bring it. I'm ready for the conversation, and I hope you'll join us too. I am Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can be part of our conversation by calling in at 805-781-3875. Our website is thereluctanttherapist.com. You can get a hold of me by email at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or through my Facebook page, which is a great way to get in touch. We post the shows each week, although this week's show is incorrect, but most of the time, we have the show ready to go. And also, of course, if you visit our wonderful kcbx.org website, look under the News and Talk tab. We're at the top there. Our shows are posted each week. And if you'd like to be able to put us in your pocket and take us with you wherever you are, you can subscribe to the podcast and receive our show each week. So lots of ways to be in touch. Mm-hmm. But really hoping that you'll want to come on the air and chat and let me know what's on your mind today. And I understand that people get anxious about this. I mean, it's scary to put your voice out there and, you know, come on the air. And so if that really is something that is too overwhelming, Brian is always happy to field questions and pass them along.
That's right. I'll take the question or comment and write it down and pass it along.
Will you write it down word for word?
Well, to the best of my ability. I'm pretty fast with my handwriting.
Okay, good. So that is another option of how to get a hold of us. All right, so let's talk about happiness. And I think, you know, I save it for this time of year because we're coming upon June, graduations, weddings, getting lots of graduation announcements. So excited for all of my friends to see their children moving off from high school into college or college off into their lives. And then weddings, wedding announcements, bridal showers, and even baby showers. And, you know, I have some friends that are going to be expecting their first child this year. And so with all of these wonderful events, right, that require us to respond in some way with graduation gifts, wedding gifts, baby shower gifts, or cards or acknowledgement, we tend to have a rote thing that we respond with. I hope you're happy. I hope it's a happy year. And, you know, we could even throw birthday in there if we really just want to ruin every great experience. Even the whole idea of happy birthday, wishing you a happy year, those are all very loaded responses. And again, we're really quick to offer these flowery statements about, you know, wishing you happiness, hope you're always happy, find something that makes you happy, find your passions, find your bliss. You know, those all sound really good and hopeful, and we, you know, stick it in an envelope with a $50 gift card and maybe a copy of Oh, the Places You'll Go by Dr. Seuss, right? Or we stick it in a gift from the bridal registry and a big flowery card that says wishing you happiness always, you know, finding your bliss. But I don't know if we ever step back and think about what it is we're actually saying. We're just looking for some avenue, right, for sticking the gift card in. Or then, you know, although I spend a lot of time looking at cards and wanting the cards to be just right, so I'm not just going to pawn that off, mm-hmm. that we just grab whatever cards at the dollar store. I mean, I think people spend a long time reading that, and then that in itself is part of the problem. If we spend a long time reading cards and we decide, yes, this is the one that says happy in bold, bold letters, I just want you to be happy, and we think that's the great wish we want to send, and we send that off. What we don't realize is that at this time in a young person's life, graduation from high school or college or grad school, or when they're setting off in their married life, and you're, you know, still kind of a newly married guy.
Yep.
These times in your life are when you most need guidance and wisdom, more than flowery sentiments, and maybe more than another iTunes gift card, mm-hmm. right? This is when you really need someone to give you some parameters. But instead, you know, a lot of parents will say, you've worked really hard for this. You've been in school since you were 5 years old. You're ready. Go take on the world. Just be happy. And can you imagine when you've been doing the same thing since you were 5 years old, right? You identify as a student. You've been a student all your life. And you kind of knew what was expected of you from September till June each year. Mm-hmm. Kind of has this routine. It's a nice flow to it. And then you're coming to the end of this period of time in your life where you finally have it whipped, right? You kind of know how this works. And then it's done. It's over. And the only thing you hear is be happy. And again, let's back up to, you know, college. A lot of people sell college as the happiest time in your life. It's supposed to be the best time in your life, right? So let's go make the most of it. And a lot of my students, to be honest, the majority of them are not having fun. Mm-hmm. They're not happy at all because it's a lot of work. They're overwhelmed. They're taking on a lot of debt. A lot of them are doing internships and jobs. They're not incredibly happy. And they're burdened by this weight of really not knowing what they want to do once they're done with school. All they really know is that they're supposed to be feeling happy. And let's talk then about why that is such a pressure. This morning I woke up and I was happy. Mm-hmm. I had my day planned. I was going to go for a swim, right? Get some stuff at Routies, do some paperwork, come interview a lovely lady. Didn't have to think about the show. Happy, happy day. Mm-hmm. And then I got an email that made me incredibly unhappy. I'm worried for Lois. I have to scramble to get the show put together. All of a sudden now I'm feeling kind of desperate and suffering on some level. So have I failed life today?
No.
But I am no longer feeling happy.
But, well, yeah, I guess I would say life isn't all about being happy. I mean, it's going to have ups and downs no matter how hard you try to just be happy. You're not going to be able to just be happy all the time.
But if your goal in all of your graduation cards and your wedding gifts said, be happy, would you not feel like you are somehow flailing?
I guess I see your point.
All right. So here we have this setup for mental, I don't want to say mental illness and not a mental disorder. I'm going to say a mental normalness or a dis-ease, an unease in our life when we are not feeling what we are expected to be feeling or what we've told ourselves we should be feeling. Our wedding day should be the happiest day of our life. I don't know about Emily's day, but I think my wedding day was fun, but it was stressful.
It's pretty stressful.
Yeah. And I don't remember being at the happiest day of my life. Certainly not. And definitely not my wedding night was not the happiest night of my life either. I mean, I keep thinking of all the times in my life where I was supposed to be happiest and they didn't really pan out. It's like those odd times where, you know, today I have a phenomenal cup of tea.
Yeah.
That makes me very happy. Right. Or a surprise visit from someone that makes me incredibly happy. But all of these setups, right, for happiest day, don't really ever pan out. Going to Disneyland, happiest place on earth. How many children leave Disneyland in tears?
Yeah.
The majority.
Most of them, it seems like.
Right? Because they're too tired, or they got a stomach ache from too many sweets, right, or they lost their ears somewhere on a ride. You know, it doesn't really pan out. So we have these huge expectations for happiness all the time. And how about just where we are in the happiest city in the United States? And I don't know. You know, we've talked about it before, but certainly since that moniker was landed on us, we have not retained that happiest feeling. Now we're kind of the overcrowdedest, right, town.
Yeah.
Is that a word, crowdedest? I don't think so. So I want to keep using this idea that we have to rethink our definition of happiness or what it is we're trying to say with that happiness, right? Because I think the intentions are good. We want, what we're trying to say is, I want well for you. Mm-hmm. I want your life to be of what it is potentially going to be. And happiness is a word that seems to fit it because happiness is a good emotion. I'm not going to wish suffering on you. I'm not going to wish misery. But I think that there has to be something better that we wish for people other than just happiness. Because it's an emotion. It comes and goes. It's not a goal. It's not a skill, right? It's not something tangible. It's a feeling. Mm-hmm. And again, too much happiness can be annoying, right? There are certain things in our life that the intensity of it after a while doesn't feel that good. So today I'm wanting to know, what alternatives do we have to wishing happiness on graduates, on those getting married, on those setting out in their life. Instead of just saying, I want you to be happy, how do we best prepare our young people, our children, for going out into the world and getting the most of it, you know, at graduation? So we don't want to sound like yet another commencement speech that, you know, kind of goes over their head. But we want to say something that they can carry with them, that they can look back on and say, oh, this will help me in a time of struggle. Because those of us who have been down the road understand that there is a lot of struggle. It's inherent in life, you know, and that's how we learn to enjoy and embrace the good times, is because when you've lived through dark and challenging times and come out the other side, you have those moments of brilliance, of feeling happy. You know, that's the payoff for the struggle. And again, I say, is it just because I'm dour? Am I just dour? But I really think, you know, when we look at research, there are more times in our life when we will struggle than when we will feel ecstasy. There are more times of stress and fear and worry and concern than there are times of exquisite joy. And so wouldn't it be better then to wish someone the ability to tolerate suffering, right? Wouldn't we rather say to someone, I wish for you the resilience to tolerate discomfort, mm-hmm. in knowing that discomfort is coming your way. You will feel anxious. You will feel depressed. You will feel stressed. You know, you will worry and wonder if you're going the right direction. And I wish for you the inner fortitude to be able to sit with that discomfort, that dissonance, until the new light shines. That's a long card. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to sell it to Hallmark, but that's a long card.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm asking of our callers today. You know, what are some wishes that would be of value to those who are just getting married? What advice, advice is kind of sticky too, but what wisdom, what thought, what tool would you like to have on that card with your gift card stuck inside that you feel like would be of value to people setting out? And I just don't want to say just young people, to anyone setting out. One of my coworkers, Dr. Ned Schultz, is retiring this year, and we had a conversation this morning in his office about, you know, 40 years of service to this university, and all of a sudden now it's kind of closing that door. And so we talked briefly about, you know, what does that mean? And he said, I'm just nervous and excited and, you know, wondering what's out there and wondering, you know, if I am going to be able to tap into these unlived lives before. And so I'm not going to say to Ned, hey, I hope you're happy, because that would be insincere. Mm-hmm. Because I know he's not just going to be happy. I know there's going to be a period of time where he's probably mourning the identity he had before he retired, or, you know, that knowingness of what's coming up when September rolls around. So how do we help to send wishes of value? This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. We'd love to hear from you. What are those wishes? And the other thing I want to talk about is having something to live for more than just ourselves. That really, with living for our own happiness becomes very hollow, and it's not enough to ground our existence on. And I wonder sometimes if a lot of suicidal ideation doesn't bubble up when we live in a society that is very eye-centric, right? When we tell everyone that the most important thing is your happiness and feeling good and following your bliss, when we tell people or sell people on the idea that that's what's most important, and we feel empty, right? When we feel like we haven't been fulfilled in some way, then it would be natural that we would have this sense and feeling of what is it all about, and how suicidal ideation might emanate up out of this idea that if I'm not happy, then I must be broken, that there must be something wrong with me, because clearly everyone else is happy, or clearly I live in the happiest place, or clearly all I needed to do is be happy, and that's so simple. And if I have failed at that, then I must be doing something wrong. And again, I'm talking about the essence of good mental health, and merely saying I need to feel happy is at the root of depression. People who feel like they are depressed are not feeling happy. And so you can imagine how far that would drive us down into this idea that we are disordered in some way. If at the heart of our goals was to feel happy and we're not feeling that, then we must be sick. But there's got to be something in between that. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of this conversation. Hi, Nancy. What's on your mind today? Hi, Nancy. Are you there? I'll give her a second to tune in. Brian, I'm pushing it back on you. Nancy, hold on. Brian will find you. 805-781-3875. The other thing I want to talk about to kind of set the conversation up today was not only graduation and weddings and what is it we need to know to be ready to set out and take on the challenges of our life, but every quarter I assign two books to my introduction of the counseling profession class. One is Ishmael by Daniel Quinn, and the other is Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. And I want to talk about Man's Search for Meaning because so much of Viktor Frankl's book is well in line with what I'm talking about today. But it gives my students a great sense of comfort in knowing that there is more to life than just finding work or feeling happy. Frankl really does a great job of talking about living with meaning or having a meaning in our lives. Hi, Nancy. Did we find you?
Yes. Hi.
How are you today? What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to say that happiness is not a static state. And it's spoken of as though it should be a static state for humanity. But life is such a process, and there's so much happening. I mean, there have been times in my life when, as a youngster, I nearly left this life at least three or four times. So it never occurred to me that I was being punished or I was bad or I did something wrong. None of that ever occurred to me. And I've never said to either my students or my children, be happy. It's like it's up to you. You got to monitor your thoughts. I mean, there may be things going on around you that could, create within you a sense of happiness. But if your thoughts are other than being feeling okay about yourself, and most of the time it's mostly about oneself rather than the world and one's place in it, people act like it says in the Constitution, a right to be happy. I don't think there's a right to be happy or a right to be sad or a right to be anything. I mean, you're going to be the way you are when you are that way.
So, Nancy, what do you think would be a better thing for the Hallmark card? What would be the better wish?
Well, life is a grand process. Enjoy it as best as you can.
Well said. Thank you, Nancy. Thanks for taking the time to call in.
Thank you.
And you bring up a great point that I wanted to mention, that we talk about the pursuit of happiness as written in the Declaration of Independence. And I don't know if you know this, Brian, but the founding fathers, when they put this in there, it had nothing to do with material wealth or the new iPhone or going to Disneyland, yeah. Right? It was none of those pursuits of happiness. It was really about the pursuit of religious freedom, mm-hmm. which is what drew the original settlers here, was to be able to worship the God or the religion or the spiritual belief of their choice. That was considered ecstasy, happiness, to be able to be a part of a belief that they could do out in the open, but had nothing to do with the material goods. And that's where, that's where the concern is that, years and years forward, now when we talk about happiness, it's all wrapped into the things that we can purchase, right? This promise that if I'm just thin enough, I'll be happy. When my hair is nice enough, I'll be happy. When I get my college degree, I'll be happy. When I meet the right guy, I'll be happy. And we keep thinking they're attached to these things or these events, or, you know, I'll get the new iPhone because the old phone stunk. And that's my favorite example, because they update it every 6 months and they always promise that it's some sort of insanely better experience. Or, you know, I'll take my children to Disneyland and then they'll all be happy. But as Nancy said, it's not long lasting. It comes and goes. You know, it feels nice in the moment, but then we move on from it. And so when we talk about this pursuit of happiness, we are talking about something much more deep, much more rich, much more nuanced, and something that takes much more thought and effort and energy than just laying a credit card down. 805-781-3875. Hi, Garland. What's on your mind?
Hey, well, you know, I think it's very, very simple.
Okay.
It goes back to the basic principle, living in the moment. And if we really lived in each moment that we have and saw the beauty in it, as an example, you go outside, you hear the birds singing, you see the breeze that's blowing through the trees, enjoying the simple things, it puts us back in perspective of what it's all about. And that way, it keeps us centered to stay in the moment.
But I have a question, though, Garland.
Yeah.
What about those times in our life when we're ill, or we are suffering, or we're grieving, or we're, you know, going through trials and tribulations? How, you know, yes, we can get a moment of taking it and saying that still exists. But what about the times in our life when we're actually going to be living below the happiness radar for a significant period of time? I mean, I'm sure you've been there.
Oh, definitely I've been there. I mean, I've been sued for over $170,000. But, you know, the focus was not so much on the situation of what I was going through. It was a focus on taking one step at a time, one step to move forward to what I've got to deal with.
Absolutely.
And, again, it kept me in the moment of, yeah, here's a crisis, but the crisis will end. This too will come to an end somewhere along the line. So you have to stay focused in taking one moment at a time. And I think the problem is that we put too much energy into getting caught up in what's going on, whereas if we took more time and focused on taking it one step at a time, and let's move through this too. So, yeah, illness is a crisis. But instead of getting caught up in the emotional part of it, take it one step at a time and try to learn to understand and work through it.
Well said, Garland. And, you know, it is a good point that maybe your Hallmark card or your card would say, you know, life is about a series of steps that we take one at a time. And when we look back on the journey, we might see that although the path veered into its own ups and downs, there were periods of time when it was phenomenal. And all along the way, we were able to breathe fresh air and enjoy the scenery. But it's really, life is about the process of that one step at a time moving through and not trying to get caught up in the moment to moment. And it's funny because you said, let's be in the moment and enjoy where we are. But there also is that part that we don't want to get caught up in defining our life in every single moment. Like right now, my tea is cold, I'm unhappy. And then I'll find, you know, I'll get a phone call from my husband and then I'm happy. Like if we are measuring our life's well-being on the moment to moment, we are going to get caught kind of in that happiness trap that, well, I need to go buy myself something so that I feel better. I need to go somewhere so I feel better. I need to spoil myself or treat myself or lose weight, you know, all those traps. Instead of, I think what Garland was trying to say, which is, you know, we kind of move through and life is a series of experiences. And if we can just stop even within the darkest times and breathe it in, we'll be okay. I think I caught that a little bit. 805-781-3875. The conversation today started off with my hope that we will do more than wish just happiness on our graduates and those getting married, that there has to be something much more substantial that we wish for them. You know, I want you to wish for them, tell them they're not as messed up as they think they are. That's the card. You're not as messed up as you think you are. Because that is something that so many people carry, right? Whenever they're not feeling happy, I must be broken. Or I didn't get my dream job. There must be something wrong with me. Or I have a hard time sleeping at night. I must be, you know, be an insomniac. We tend to get so self-focused on every little minute and experience. And then we compare it to what we see on Facebook or social media or, you know, in the news. And we think, if I'm comparing myself, comparison is the thief of joy. If I'm comparing myself to others, then I must be messed up. So give them a poster that says you're not as messed up as you think you are. Normalize anxiety and depression as natural responses to stressful experiences. Encourage creativity. Encourage service. And again, encourage them to be able to tolerate the dissonance and discomfort that comes with change. Because if anything, graduations and weddings and retirement have a lot of change involved, and change in itself is one of the most stressful things that we experience. Hi, Annabelle, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Professor Barrett.
Hello, Annabelle. You sound like a soon-to-be graduate.
That's me. Yeah, for all those listening, I'm a former student of Elizabeth and a soon-to-be graduate of Cal Poly. And I wanted to share just that this is one of the most important things that I think I learned from you, the fact that happiness isn't everything and that you can find joy even in not being happy, even in struggling and feeling pain or feeling growing pains or grieving or anything. You can still somehow find some joy if you're able to kind of just sit with the unhappiness, I guess. And at the beginning of this year, I wanted to transfer from Cal Poly. I just wasn't happy at all. And I thought, if I'm not happy, what am I doing here? I should leave. This isn't worth it. But I ended up sticking it out, and this year was just incredible, and in a funny way, one of the happiest years I've ever had, but not in the traditional sense of being happy. It was a lot of growing and a lot of pain and a lot of just everything. And so I think if I could say anything to other people of my age trying to figure it out, just know that the greatest happiness and joy can often come from learning that you're strong enough to handle all the rest of it.
Well, and I think what you're talking about, Annabelle, is the different definitions of happiness, right? What you experienced mm-hmm. was this sense of pride in yourself that gave you self-assuredness and self-esteem that gives us a deep sense of satisfaction and happiness.
Right.
Whereas a lot of us believe that happiness is that feeling in day-to-day. Did I like my pizza? Do I like my class? Is my teacher, right? That happiness measure is not going to do well for us because it's too flux. But to sit with your discomfort or sit with your angst or to sit with your dissonance and to come out the other side, that's a more deeply rooted and foundational sense of satisfaction that's going to sustain you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost a different word. Like what we define as happiness now isn't what I'm talking about, but I don't necessarily know what the new word would be.
I know.
Gratitude or joy or something, but
I agree because I think like the word love, it's mm-hmm. used in such broad terms, you know, that you can love your husband and love coffee in the same sentence. It doesn't have the same weight to it. So, and I look forward to seeing you at graduation, by the way.
Yeah, I do too.
Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, of course.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to Public Radio, KCBX. Today's conversation is around this idea of happiness and what kind of wishes do we want to share with those who are graduating or getting married or going to become new parents or retiring. We have to have something, I think, more solid to say then I want you to be happy, especially as parents, you know, to tell our children from a young age, just be happy. If you don't like it, if you're not having fun, we'll do something else. You know, that creates a very hollow sense of being. And I imagine, and Annabelle brought up a great point, Virginia Satir, who was one of the founding members of psychotherapy or founding women of psychotherapy, and she talked about the importance of building self-esteem. And of course, that idea got exploited in huge ways that we thought, oh, if a little self-esteem is good, we'll give everyone a trophy and everyone will feel good. But the problem with that idea is that getting something without having to work for it is incredibly hollow. And so giving children trophies for things that they didn't even participate in doesn't give them any self-esteem. It makes them feel a little embarrassed. And, you know, in the long run, they don't really have a sense of their ability to do anything. But Virginia Satir talked about the importance of earning our self-esteem through the struggle or failing or not getting what we thought we wanted more than anything and then realizing that we really didn't want it that badly, that we're never that happy. We're never that happy for as long as we think we will be, and we're never that sad or devastated for as long as we think we're going to be. And that ultimately knowing that we can hold both of those things, happiness and misery at the same time and still be okay, is really the key to self-esteem. That to know we're capable of holding strong emotions, whether it's ecstasy or misery, is really the essence of good mental health. 805-781-3875. What do you think are the things we should be wishing then for graduates, those getting married, new parents, those retiring? What wishes would you rather have share with them? Hi, Richard, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I've just been, I've had a couple of rough years with medical things, and I'm gradually, the thing that's scary the most for older people is losing your self-reliance, so that you, as you look forward, you're going, oh my God, is somebody going to have to take care of me? Mm. I just was in the hospital 10 days and you know, I didn't have one visitor, so I finally started realizing that most of my friends are dead, you know. And the closest family I have is in Arizona, so you start looking around and going, well, sense of humor's always given me happiness, but, I mean, gradually, I mean, nothing I do seems to, you know, be of any value anymore, it seems like. I don't know.
So tell me what used to give you a sense of value.
Well, you know, working was always real good. I liked working a lot. And then I have spinal stenosis. So gradually, as my back has gotten worse, I can the maximum I can lift is like 20 pounds now. So it's almost impossible to do any work. Mm-hmm. And there's a Robert Frost poem that keeps reoccurring to me. It says, "Men of earth, look me in the stars and tell me truly, if all the soul and body scars were not to pay, too much to pay for birth." And I'm starting to feel like the soul and body scars are about all I got left, you know. So I just don't know how to shake it. Sometimes I get in just down and I can't shake it up. Or I used to just laugh it off, you know.
Right, that the humor was your go-to.
Yes.
And was it being humorous yourself, or was it watching humorous films? Or?
Oh, yeah, I can still be. Like my best friend has a place down in Mexico, so I haven't been able to see him, and he's going to be coming back soon, but I have been able to talk to him on the phone. And so if we can just joke about stuff, then that's, you know, I can get 15 minutes of a conversation and laugh. Mm-hmm. And then it's back to, okay, what do you want to do? You know, and like TV is all commercials nowadays. And I listen to the radio, and luckily KCBX still offers a lot of good stuff. But by the time it's evening and I've eaten dinner, and it's like, oh my God, I got to make it through another night. Mm-hmm. The days are fine, but it's like going to bed and going, okay, wake up tomorrow and go to battle again, you know.
Right, the dark of the night is...
Yes, the dark of the night is starting to just be creepy, you know. Mm-hmm. Instead of a time of rest, it's like, God, I hope I can sleep tonight, or right, I hope I'm not in so much pain that I can lay here. You know, it's I just don't know how to... If there's something that you could actually... A little phrase or a little something that can shake you out of the stupor of unhappiness.
Right, and I think, you know, what I keep hearing is this transition that you're going through from needing to kind of accept the life you once had and be moving towards what am I capable of now, right? Because I hear a lot of about the, I can't lift over 20 pounds or I can't be the person I used to be or a lot of the people, right? There's a lot of letting go.
I can still do, like, you know, of course, when I went to the hospital, I was barely, you know, I wasn't able to do a lot of stuff. But so they've patched me up again, and I can do pretty much everything. But it's the thought of actually having to be completely dependent on nurses or, you know, it's that thought of losing self-reliance. Right now, I'm back to be, I can do my laundry, I can clean the house, I can cook, I can do everything. But it's like, okay, how much longer is this going to happen? And if I have to be dependent on somebody, I don't want to be around. That's what the bottom line is. I don't want to have to ask people for every little bit of help to do anything, you know?
I hear the pride in your voice. And I think it's the story of your generation, because I hear that from my parents as well.
Oh, but, really?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's the story of your generation. It must be the self-reliance coming out of, you know, the Depression or World War II, or, you know, there's something about your generation in that sense of, you know, being able to do it all on my own. But I have some homework for you, Richard.
Okay? All right.
All right. So what I want you to do while you're in this space where you can still do for yourself these things that you, you know, to kind of keep your life going, getting your meals, right? I want you to start thinking about, so what does it look like when I can't do these things? And I want you to start imagining, what are the things I do when I can't do these things? Because you have to start envisioning what that next piece looks like, because that's what's getting you start in the dark of the night, is that instead of starting to imagine, right? Imagine what that looks like and finding that place. Where does a man with a good sense of humor share his humor, right? Where does a man, if I can't, you know, lift things, what are my other potential opportunities? Because once you can start to see one or two things, and I don't care what it is, I don't know if you go on the computer or I don't know how, you know, we could talk more, you can send me an email. But I need to help you find a vision of what Richard looks like post who Richard was before. And once you have a little bit of bridge, there's something to live for. Because, you know, we're going to talk about Viktor Frankl and his book, Man's Search for Meaning. Have you ever read that book?
No, I haven't.
Please read it, because he's your contemporary. Read his book. Because his foundational...
How do you spell his last name?
F-R-A-N-K-L, Frankl, or Frankl.
F-R-A-N-K-L?
Yes, F-R-A-N-K-L, and then Victor, V-I-K-T-O-R. In 1991, this book was listed as one of the 10 most influential books of all time in the United States.
Yeah.
And it's a tough read. The beginning's a tough read because he is a Holocaust survivor. He was a psychiatrist and a neurologist, and he lost his entire family in the Holocaust. But he founded a psychotherapy principle called logotherapy. And it's about the importance of finding meaning in all forms of our existence. You know, no matter how, even in suffering, we can find meaning in our life. Even in the most dire of circumstances, if we can find a why we're living, we can live through anything. And it's incredibly inspiring. And you told me you wanted something, a nugget, to get you through those dark nights. Start with that book.
And then, alrighty.
And then you call me back or you send me an email and let's talk about what the next thing looks like, because... You know, I understand and appreciate the...
I'm sure I don't know, like, are your parents still driving a car?
Yes.
Okay, well, me too. So, like, you know, I keep seeing, like, my auntie is 88, and she's gradually, 3 years ago, she couldn't drive anymore. Now she's got cataracts, and she loves to read books. Now she's only got one eye. You know what I mean? And she's still got a pretty good attitude. But I keep seeing, as people get older and older, they just can't hardly do anything. You know what I mean?
No. And as a man who's proud and was always able and capable of doing, I imagine it'd be one of the most devastating things to face. But then this is where the true measure of you as a man comes to play, right? Are you able to adjust?
Well, I keep trying. Yeah, I don't give up.
That's
so
right.
Keep plugging away at it.
And that's why you called me, because you want to keep plugging. I hear the desire to thrive inside you. I can hear it in your voice. So get that book. And then you need to call me back. And I'm going to be talking to a woman in a couple of weeks on the air, Lois Bristow, who's in a similar place also. And I think that's another conversation I would want you to call in and join.
All right, buddy.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot, Elizabeth. Bye.
Have a good day. Bye. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My number is 805-781-3875 if you'd like to be part of our conversation today, talking about needing to have more to offer than just words of happiness, because you can hear that that is hollow. Just wishing for someone to have a bright thought or a happy day or take in the air, that isn't enough to sustain us when things get difficult and hard. And so we need to be able to give people something more substantial to hang on to, right? That creativity, we all have it inside of us. What is it that draws on your creativity? Do you paint? Do you sing? Do you write poetry? We all have something inside of us that wants to be expressed. We want to encourage tolerance. We want to encourage the ability to sit with suffering and to find that meaning. We need to offer more than just platitudes. Mark, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. What's on your mind today?
I'm just talking about one aspect of happiness, but a favorite quote of mine is, who is the one who's unhappy? And the answer is the one who finds fault. So seeing our faults in ourselves or our situation or other people creates a lot of unhappiness. So, of course, seeing the good in other people and yourself, and hopefully your situation can would be the antidote to that.
So what would your card say for the new graduate?
Well, this isn't the best, but I don't think of happiness. I think for myself of well-being, like the end of a prayer might say, all is well. And I find that to be, I don't know, more solid and more helpful for me, because it's a bigger tent than happiness. Happiness. I believe that happiness is sort of a residual thing that comes from living the right way, you know, thinking right, eating right, exercise, whatever, however you see that, treating other people right. But I really think happiness is just something that comes of its own accord. I think when you seek it directly, it's kind of a fool's game.
Well, it's interesting, because I was talking about Viktor Frankl and his book, Man's Search for Meaning. And one of the quotes from the book I was going to share was, don't aim at success. The more you aim at it and make it a target, the more you're going to miss it. For success, like happiness, cannot be pursued. It must be found. And it does so as an unintended side effect of one's personal dedication to a cause greater than oneself, or as the byproduct of one's surrender to a person other than oneself. Happiness must happen, and the same holds for success. You have to let it happen by not caring about it. In the long run, success will happen precisely because you have forgotten to think about it.
That's exactly what I was thinking as far as byproduct or residual effect. Yeah.
Exactly. That's why I brought up. I said, Mark, you were reading my mind. Thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thank you.
805-781-3875. Hi, Bill. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, no, this is Bill. You're probably tired of hearing from me, but I had a comment and a question.
Okay.
The comment was for your previous caller who was worried about having people take care of himself.
Yes.
And my story is that I've been in a wheelchair for 30 years, and at first it was almost overwhelming, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how I was going to make my life work. And but I started figuring it out, and the last 10 years I've been living by myself, and I used to get more freaked out when nobody was nearby that I could call for help, but it's amazing how much you can figure out your own difficulties and solve your own problems. And I think he should have faith in himself.
So your experience was that when you were faced with having to depend on yourself, you were stronger than you thought.
Yeah, and things work out. And you can figure out a lot of things and adapt to difficulty.
Absolutely. And I don't get sick of you calling, Bill, by the way.
Okay. All right. My question is, do people project their own unhappiness on other people? Like, you know, I'm relatively happy, but I have a feeling that when people see me in my wheelchair, they think, he must be really unhappy, you know, being in that wheelchair. You know, and then they really don't want to have much contact with you. Is that a? Do you think that's a?
Well, I don't know if it's a projecting their unhappiness as much as I think something you and I might have talked about briefly once before is that it's the discomfort, right? That people fear they're going to catch it somehow. Maybe like I'm going to catch being in a wheelchair, or should I feel, you know, sympathy, or I don't, I think it's the inability to just be with someone and not get out of your discomfort. And I think that's what they're projecting, you know, is that, wow, I don't want to be too happy in front of Bill because he must surely be unhappy in his wheelchair. And then they come across looking awkward or, you know, unhappy. And I think, you know, it's a conversation we should have much longer is how are we best with people when we're feeling uncomfortable? I don't know if that answers your question, but I hope it's a start.
Well, it was just an idea that popped in my head.
I appreciate it. And we'll have this conversation again because you and I have talked about it.
Okay.
We will. Thank you for calling in, Bill. 805-781-3875 is the number. Today we're talking about happiness and wishing more than just happiness on someone. And I want to talk briefly again about Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. I assign it to my students, you know, both Ishmael by Daniel Quinn and Man's Search for Meaning. Because they talk about, you know, what is it that we're living for? What is this purpose for life? You know, because that's what my students are thinking about. They're at that time, like, what does it all mean? And again, there's a huge amount of existential angst that comes up when you're a student or in many times in our life, if you're, you know, coming to the end of your life or you've hit a rough patch in your life, that you all of a sudden have this experience of meaninglessness, right? That those things that you thought were so important all of a sudden have no meaning at all. So Viktor Frankl was a psychiatrist, a neurologist, a Holocaust survivor. He wrote this book about logotherapy and developed this whole practice of logotherapy, which is the existential approach to dealing with that lack of meaning that's paramount in existential stress that many people feel. And he coined the term Sunday neurosis, which is a form of anxiety resulting in an awareness in some people of the emptiness in their lives once the work week is over. They have a feeling of a void, a vague sense of discontent, feeling ennui, feeling cynical, feeling lack of purpose. And again, that is a normal response to this very fast-paced, materialistic society that we live in, that life really in many ways is meaningless. And so we have to create meaning for ourselves. We have to create the why. And so one of those great ways of creating why is to have a cause. And so I encourage my students to find a cause, something they're passionate about, and to jump in full bore. Because in order to find meaning in our lives, we have to have a cause, something to fight for that's bigger than ourselves. Frankl found that in his relationship with his wife, that he said we can find a cause external of ourselves, or we can find a cause in deep love and a surrender of ourselves to another person. So I'm wondering what you think about that. I mean, do you have a cause? Rebecca, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, you just took my answer.
I did. I'm sorry. Well, tell
what
me then.
What I was going to say was that in the times that have been most challenging for me and when I have felt most unhappy was when I was disconnected and I didn't have a lot of friends and I wasn't connected with my community and I didn't feel like I wasn't purposeful or I didn't feel like I had a purpose. And when I kind of, I guess, found my people and found the friends who I really connected with and on a deep level, I started to feel so much, it sort of buoyed my spirit and I was able to look beyond myself to the community and find meaning there. And it made me, I was thinking of this as, I think it was Richard who was talking, mm-hmm. and how it just broke my heart. It made me want him to reach out.
I can feel the emotion that I was feeling in your voice, Rebecca. because it is, we do want people to feel like that they matter in deep and profound ways. And I think that the cause is really a huge piece of it, that we have to have something to fight for that's more than just ourselves. And when we find that, whatever it is, it doesn't have to be lifelong, it can be a month long thing, but something that we care about, because that having something to care about puts us in touch with other people who care as well and builds our community. Thank you for taking the time to call. Susan, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I think what my card would say is I wish them strength for to make their journey,
mm-hmm.
because that more than anything, my husband and I have been through quite a few things in our life, and people always come up and say, you're so strong, and I always say, what choice did I have?
Exactly. And I bet you surprised yourself. And I bet you surprised yourself how strong you are.
Many times.
Absolutely. I love that card. Yeah. Make sure you add glitter to it, too.
I will. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. And Dave, you get the last word today. What's on your mind?
Okay, I was really moved by the caller a few times. I think it was Richard that talked about the feeling of aloneness as he gets older and the ability to do things. And my feeling about that, and I share the same feelings, but I feel sometimes like there's a kind of a stone in my shoe, or maybe it's a thorn in my side. But it's I think it's basically fear. And so the question is, how do you constantly, when you have that kind of fear that you're going to be alone or die alone or something like that, how do you continue to maintain hope and realize that, challenge the fear, because the fear is the stone in the shoe.
Absolutely.
You know, there's like when you get a rock in your shoe and you can feel it all the time, which tends to make it, you ask yourself, why don't I feel happy? And you kind of feel unhappy because you feel disconnected.
Well, and it's so funny, Dave, because I use the example of the stone in our shoe in the way of telling my students that's what's going to motivate you to get things done in your life. Because when you are uncomfortable long enough with that stone in your shoe, you're going to do something to get that stone out. And
right.
And so the key piece is, how do we pose the question instead of, you know, asking ourselves, what is the meaning of life or why am I here, to change a little bit and say, what is life asking of me? What is life asking of me in this moment, in this suffering, or with this rock in my shoe, or this fear that I'm going to die alone? What is life asking of me? And when you can find that, you can move forward. Because we all have not a purpose, because that sounds so flowery, but it's, we all have a why. We all have someone who needs us right now that we're not paying attention to, or we don't recognize, or we haven't found it yet. And so I think to switch the focus from worrying about ourselves and being alone, and to look outside and say, where am I needed in life, and to go to that place. And
that's the connectedness I was talking about. When you get that connectedness, you lose that feeling of disconnectedness and that fear.
Right. And there's need, right? There's need every corner. There's someone as lonely or not lonelier than we are.
Yeah.
We start off by stepping on the shoe and taking the shoe off and shaking out the rock and asking what we should do next. Dave, thank you for taking the time to call. And thank you to my listeners for creating this show today. Went in so many directions that I hadn't thought of. I appreciate it. Look at those cards. Make a handmade card that says something of meaning and value, and pass that wish on and that wisdom to those who need it most. As always, I appreciate you supporting Public Radio KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can listen to our shows by podcasting or going to kcbx.org or sending me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com.